accession number 18262, reel 4.
Carter, reel 4.
Yeah, they were, as I say, they were all called, they were comfort from home. You'd get them sent up, toothpaste, cigarettes, free cigarettes from Pall Mall and people like that. I think they were trying to encourage us to smoke. We had, after about a week, we had quite a collection in our tent, bag, plenty of cigarettes, cans of beer, bottles of beer coming up, and we were settled in on the side of this small hill. The pup tents were at the rear of the hill, and it was just a 20% stand to. We were overlooking, as I say, we're 1,000 yards from the river. Anyhow, one night, we set up trip flares around the base of the hill, and we were getting a lot of trouble with the wild pheasants out there. There was lots and lots of pheasants in the hills, and they had a habit of knocking our trip wires and firing the flares up, and everyone thought we were being attacked. One night, we were being attacked by a patrol of Chinese or North Koreans, I don't know who it was. And we fired on them and drove them off. But unbeknown to us, it was a penetrating patrol. They were just trying to find our positions out. Then a couple of days later, the aerial reconnaissance came in and said they'd seen a lot of Chinese on the banks of the Indian River, the other side, and they were crossing. But no one knew where they were going to. So one of the other companies sent a patrol down to the river to try and stop them on this crossing. It was like a shallow area of the Indian River. And it was the area we went across in the tanks and the couriers on the other patrol. The Chinese were crossing there because it was only about nearly up to waist deep at the deepest. The Chinese were crossing there with mules and things like that. And during the night, they were only crossing at night, and they weren't attacking us. They were coming up the valleys between the two positions and coming down to our rear, unbeknown to us. But we could hear them from the top of the hill. Nothing was done about it, and they couldn't be found where they were going to, these Chinese troops. And one of the companies, the other company, I think it was D Company, sent a patrol down to the river to try and stop them. I can't imagine what one patrol is going to do. Anyway, they got down there in the evening, overlooking the Indian River, and as it got dusk, the Chinese started to cross again on this crossing. They opened up on this, the patrol opened up on the Chinese that were crossing the river, and they killed quite a few Chinese and drove them back. But in the end, it was just like like King Canute trying to stop the waves. When the Chinese were coming across in so thick and so heavy a numbers that this patrol ran out of ammunition before they could stop them. They couldn't stop them then. And the Chinese literally, they pulled back to their company area. So everyone was on 50% alert then. Nothing happened that night. Next morning we were on our hill, our nice comfortable hill, with everything we had there, all mod cons by that time, we'd been there that long. And we were ordered to pull out and leave everything. Come midday, we had to leave our tents, food, any food we had to pull off this hill and move back further to the battalion hill, closer to the battalion hill. The CO was bringing every company in close so that we had a whole ring, more or less, of hills, and we were going to stop there. Yeah, it was going to be our area. We pulled up onto the side of the mountains to our next position, a And as we climbed up the side there, we looked back and we could see the Chinese going through our positions. They must have had a field day. There was cigarettes, beer, everything was all left. They were going through our tents and taking it, running about with everything under their arms that they could take, sleeping bags, everything. It was all there left, just literally left. We pulled up onto the top of our hill. We were to the right of the battalion hill at that time. D Company was to the front of the battalion hill and the other companies were spread out. That night, the Belgian battalion got attacked across the other side of the river. They got pushed off the hill, the Belgians did, and they came waded across the river, what was left of them. They waded across the river and came and joined the Ulster Rifles that were closer to the river than what we were. Next, the Chinese attacked the Northumberland Fusiliers, and by that time we were up in position on our other hill at the time, making a defensive area there around the top. And we sat there that night and watched the Chinese attack the Northumberlands. And we could tell, as you could watch the battle literally moving up the side of the hill with the flashes and the explosions and things like that. And we knew the Northumberlands had had it, because when the Chinese get to the top of a hill and they've taken a position, they fire a white Very light up. And this is what they do on all their positions. They had no radios, the Chinese, but that was their way of signaling to their headquarters that they'd taken a certain hill. That night, we settled down. D Company was hit. That night, we were okay for that night. D Company was hit and they were pushed off that night. They retreated back to Battalion Hill. Next, it was our turn. They did attack each company one at a time. They'd never attack the whole lot en masse. They used to attack en masse to one company. And there was thousands. You could, all over. I've never seen so many soldiers in my life as there was there. They were literally, as I say, like ants coming out of an ant's nest. And they were all over the place. And they had, our intelligence told us, don't worry about them. They have 9 and 10 in their little sections, they said. And one of them would have a machine gun. One would have some sort of light automatic gun, and the rest had bayonets on sticks. This is our intelligence. This is what they told us. Bayonets had sticks. They didn't tell us the other 9 had automatics. It was us with bolt action rifles against an automatic, and it good your best shots, the most you could fire with a rifle, an ordinary Lee Enfield rifle, bolt action, you could fire off about 8 shots a minute if you were lucky. These people had burp guns, Russian-made burp guns, and gas rifles, Russian-made gas rifles that fired off automatically. And also they had these little hand machine guns as well, with 2-inch mortars, tiny 2-inch mortar bombs. And they attacked you with these things. Well, you try and stop them with a Lee Enfield rifle, single shot rifle up against an automatic, you usually find that the man with the heaviest firepower wins the area. And yeah, this is why all our companies were literally being pushed off the hills. We had no firepower compared to them. Our turn came that night. I was in a forward position to the right-hand side of the hill. We clear all the bushes back, the scrub back, about 20 metres in front of our whole area. We cut the whole lot down flat so we had some sort of sighting. On the top of a mountain, you can't dig down. You can go down about a foot, I suppose, of earth, and you couldn't go any further. So you had to build up. any rocks you found, you built up and build yourself a big rock wall. What you do, you put a layer of rocks and you put a layer of earth and a layer of rocks on top of that until you built yourself a wall to protect you. The only thing, you stood out like a sore thumb. You stood out like looking across the road and seeing a wall. The Chinese came up that night. As I say, the Americans had the artificial moonlight up that night, which was helping us quite a lot. And I had a full view of our area, 20 metres in front of us, which we'd cut down, cut all the bushes down. To the right-hand side, in my trench, was Corporal Spud Taylor and Don Cornish, my number two. Young lad, he was, never saw a nice fella. Hadn't been with me very long. And it was all quiet there. Spud had his pipe on. I'll never forget that. He had his pipe with his hand over the top. He used to smoke his pipe. And Spud was sat in behind the wall, nice and quiet it was. And I said to Spud, look at that there. To the right-hand side of us, 20 yards in front of us, was about 8 or 10 Chinese, all in a circle. All in this area. They were all in a circle in front of us. And one of them, he must have been the political commissar or something, he was pointing out all our positions to these Chinese. So Spud said, give him a burst then. Give him a burst, Frank. So I lined up the old Bren gun on him and let go a full magazine at him. When I looked out again, there was nothing. There was a chap staggering around and about 6 or 8 bodies on the floor after the smoke cleared, that was. And we had heard nothing more of them then. It was all went all quiet. It must have been about 10:30, 11 at night, I suppose. They started lobbing mortar bombs in on us. And if a mortar bomb goes off and it hits rock, it not only throws shrapnel about, it throws rocks about as well. The rocks splinter and fly in all directions. And they started to attack us. I was firing that Bren gun non-stop for about an hour. And they came at us in waves, and we were managing to hold them off with a Bren gun in our little area, unbeknown to me. I don't know about the other areas. In our front, we had about a 20-yard width front. We were holding them off because I had a Bren gun. I had a machine gun. Spud had a Sten gun. And my number two was loading the magazines for me. That's all he was doing. We kept on being attacked, but we were driving them back. I suppose it must have been 3 o'clock in the morning. It had gone quiet once more, and they got back. And to our front, there was dozens of Chinese bodies all over the place to the front of our area that I tore down. But you had a job to tell the difference, whether they were alive, some were wounded, some were groaning. You could hear them in the front of us. And 3 o'clock in the morning, and Donald was loading up the magazines. He had kept me with 8 magazines. That's all I had, 8, was for the whole Bren gun. And 32 rounds don't last long in a Bren gun. So I was giving him a hand, and my head must have got above the wall, I don't know. All of a sudden, there was a big flash. I felt a flash in my head, and I fell forward. I'd been hit. I had a bullet. It went in my eye. It came out by my ear. Must have knocked me out for about 10 seconds, because when I came round, Donald was bandaging me up with a field dressing. So anyhow, I said to Donald, there's no way that shot could have come from 20 yards back in that bush. I said, there's someone closer. They've crept up closer to us. There's a sniper around here somewhere and amongst these bodies. So I built this concrete position with like a palisade on it with a gap in it where I stuck the Bren gun through, and I could see the area to the front, but it was like a narrow slit in the bricks, and I used that to mount the Bren gun in so that I had protection either side of my head for any loose bullets that were coming. And I thought I was seeing things, and I saw this rifle move in the front of me, about six yards away, I suppose it was. I saw this rifle move. So I said to Donald, "Keep your head down. There he is," he said. I said. So I fired in the direction of this body, and it jumped and squirmed and stopped dead. And it stopped. So I thought, well, I got him. Must have got him anyhow. And all of a sudden, another shot came in. Just went over the top of the... hit the bricks, flew off, ricocheted off in another direction. And I said to Donald, "Keep down. That sniper's still around." So anyhow, I'd been hit. I was blind in my left eye. And I could see all right with my right eye, which was the eye I used for shooting with. All of a sudden, Donald looking through his little slit, and he says, "There he is, Frank." And I said, "Where?" And all of a sudden, he stuck his head up, Donald did. And the sniper got him, right between the eyes. Donald fell back into the back of the trench. I thought, "Christ almighty, what am I going to do now?" I bandaged him up. He had a bullet but right between his head and came out the back. I bandaged him up, poor chap. He was still breathing. So I got on the little radio, intercompany radio I had with me, and called up to company headquarters. "Send the bloke down with a stretcher." I says, "Donald's been hit." So I looked across at Spud, and he was dead in the bottom of the trench. I didn't even know he'd died. Spud was dead. I was the only one left alive out of three of us. And I was stuck there, filling my own magazines with one chap dying and another chap dead. So I called up again. I said, "Spud's dead." I said, "I want someone to come down and give me a hand." No one came down. No one. Shots was going off all over the place, so no one had moved. Stretcher bearers never came down for about an hour afterwards. I was firing the Bren gun and filling the magazines up. And where it was only me shooting at the time, the Chinese were overrunning our positions. And they were attacking into the centre of the company. And they were going right past me. They left me for some unknown reason. They were going past me and attacking the inside of the company, the centre of the company. And the company, the chaps in the company, it was all hand-to-hand fighting then. Our chaps were driving them back with pickaxe handles and rocks and anything they could get their hand off, with ammunition shooting at them and that, when they ran out of ammunition, with bayonets and everything, and they were chasing these Chinese back. And as they came back through me, I don't know why they never saw me. I was in the bottom of the trench beside the moonlight at that time was throwing a shadow from the rocks. And it was covering me, so perhaps that's why they never saw me in the bottom of the rocks. It was throwing a shadow where I was sat. And I always remember as they come running back, these Chinese, and they came running back. I happened to have a full magazine on the Bren. And as they came back, I was shooting over the top of Donald and over the top of Spud and catching them as they were chased back down the hill to the side. And it all went quiet again. Must have been getting on for 4 o'clock, getting dawn the following morning, I think. And I was sat in the hole there. No one answered the radio from the top, from the company. I couldn't get anyone to answer it. And I thought, well, what am I going to do now? I'm stuck here. Dead bloke, wounded bloke. I'm wounded. Trying to load these magazines. I ran out of hand grenades. It was just me and the Bren gun stuck there, and there was a slit trench at the side. Whether them chaps had been hit, I don't know, because I never heard anything from there. And I thought, oh, well, what the hell am I going to do now? And I shouted up. I shouted up, send a stretcher bearer down. Donald was still breathing, but very, very heavy. So like a troubled breathing it was, very troubled. And I thought, so, well, he's not going to last very much longer. Eventually, I heard movement behind me. Out of the dawn to dark, and I could see these two figures, two chaps came down, stretcher bearers, got Donald, put him on a stretcher. And they said, you've got to pull back. I said, who's coming in here? Who's taking over this position then? They said, no one. We're making the company smaller. Because it gradually, the area was getting smaller and smaller. This is what they were doing, the Chinese. They'd pick off each section. Then they'd pick off the companies. They're making this area. I said, how about the Bren gun? They said, you've got to leave it. I said, well, we want it up there, surely. No, they got all the armoury they want up there. Take the bar off and throw it away, they said. That's what I done. I took the barrel off, threw it away, grabbed Donald's rifle, went back to the top. Went up there. There was two or three wounded blokes lying about on that area. And they were all in the reverse part of the slope. And there was like a... Going down to the back of this slope was like a groove in the side of the hill with all overgrown with bushes. And it went right down the hill. Good protection it was, very good protection for anyone that wanted to go that way. They attacked again. But as I was wounded, I was up with the wounded, covering the rear with a rifle. I can always remember, I was just at the rear of the hill and I was watching the chaps with these Chinese attacking. And they weren't in, stood behind things and that. It was all hand-to-hand fighting. And I can always remember we had a one-eyed officer. How he got into the army, I don't know. He had a glass eye. And he always used to walk about with these two 45s on his hip. Like a cowboy. American 45s, because our people had 38s and they thought they weren't big enough. He had these two 45s. I'll never forget, and he was stood up on top of this hill. I could see him stood up just in front of me. And he was blazing away with these two 45s, just like a cowboy. And everyone was blazing away. And they were all stood up, trying to keep these, stop the Chinese attacking. They drove them off once more. CO out of our old group. And he called everyone in. He said, we're not going to hold this hill much longer for another charge. It's every man for himself, he said, more or less. You got to make yourself to Battalion Hill if you can. You've all got, it's every man for himself. So, I noticed this groove, small ravine, I suppose, down this back of this hill that we were on, and I thought, well, that'd be a good way to get out. So I shot down the back of this hill, and it led to the back, down into the valley where all the Chinese were passing. Got down to the valley, and there was about 100 yards between me and the road, I suppose, that led between the hills. And going up that road, I'd never seen so many Chinese soldiers in all my life. They were going up with mules and the small mountain artillery that they had on the back of the mules. They weren't taking a bit of notice of us that were being driven off our hill. They were just getting behind us. And by that time, the Chinese were 5 miles behind us at that time. We were literally left up there. The whole battalion was left up there. The Americans had fell back. And we were literally up there, stuck. I shot down the back of this hill with a rifle. And I looked behind me and there was about 8 other chaps following me. Gets down the bottom of the hill, and as I say, this road was covered in Chinese soldiers. Just see them in the light. It was daylight, practically, literally daylight. And they weren't taking any notice of us at all. They never fired on us, nothing. They were intent on getting behind us. Anyhow, we followed along parallel. We couldn't get towards Battalion Hill because the road that the Chinese were on was between us and Battalion Hill. We couldn't get that way at all. We thought we'd get annihilated if we go that way. So we went along the valley, along the bottom of the hills, this mountain range there, parallel with the road, more or less. The eight of us, it was. What happened to the rest, I don't know, the company. They all split up, more or less. And we followed along the hidden. We hid down in ditches as these Chinese patrols were coming by. We'd hide down in a ditch to get out their way. And several times patrols passed us, and how they missed us, I don't know. They were so intent on getting behind us, I suppose. I don't know. They were covering the whole area. As they drove you off the hill, they'd send a patrol out, the Chinese, would try and catch all people that were loose, more or less, all over the place. I suppose we went about, must have gone about 4-5 miles, I suppose, along this valley. Chinese soldiers everywhere. We got to the end of the valley, There was a narrow, sort of like a bit of a ravine, a very slow, very low hill it was there. And we had to go up this gradual incline and down over the other side between these two hills. We could hear these tanks firing over there. We thought, let them go. Good luck. We got out. We got to the rear. We started to go up this slope, and we're in the open then. Unbeknown to us, to the right-hand side, sat on the side of this hill, was a Chinese patrol. We were all in the open. We're sitting targets, literally. We had no protection whatsoever. And they fired some shots at us. No. It never hit us. They fired over our heads. And we could see there was more up there than there was us, and they were in the open as well. We thought, shall we make a run for it? The tanks were on the other side of this hill. We could hear these tanks firing. We thought, well, it wasn't the Chinese because they never had tanks up that far. So it must be some of ours. And then they came down and they captured us. The first thing they did, they were all smiles, these Chinese were. Shook our hands. Good fight. Good fight, they said, in broken English, more or less. What the hell, what are these up to, you know? You'll always find that with a frontline soldier. He's a lot that anyone that's been in a battle, they never ill-treat their prisoners. In both sides, you'll always find that. And these came down, they were smiling, and they were handing out these safe conduct passes that they had written in English, stating that we wouldn't be ill-treated and things like that. Anyhow, before they got to us, we took the bolts out, the rifles and any guns that we had, split them up, flung them all over the place so that the Chinese couldn't use them. They captured us and took us into this valley, took us up into the mountains, into the valley, into a large valley, a big long valley. And as we were being taken into this valley, we were going to join up with this Chinese battalion, I suppose. They were all under camouflage, all along this valley, underneath the hills, the rocks. You can see right the way down through all these Chinese. There was hundreds of them. And they dug in under the side of the mountain, and they were camouflaged. And everything.